Hello, and welcome to the Open Systems Media webcast titled Hardware Software Reuse Solutions for Modern Avionics Systems. My name is John McHale, Group Editorial Director with Open Systems Media, a moderator for today's event. Our speakers today are Dr. Benjamin Bruskell, Senior Technical Staff AdaCore, Pavan Singh, VP of Product Management for Link Software, and Chip Downing, Senior Market Development Director, Aerospace and Defense at Real Time Innovations, better known as RTI. Dr. Bruskell is a member of the AdaCore senior technical staff and has been involved with programming language design and implementation throughout his career, concentrating on languages and technologies for high assurance software. He was a member of the design team for Ada 95 and has also served in expert groups for several Java specification requests. He's also an active member of the technical working group for the Open Group's Future Airborne Capability Environment Consortium, better known as FACE. And he's written many articles and delivered talks on FACE-related technologies at several FACE technical interchange meetings. He holds a BA in mathematics from Amherst College and an MS and PhD degrees in applied mathematics from Harvard University. Pavan Singh, as mentioned, is Vice President of Product Management at Leak Software. In his role, he is responsible for product strategy, product management, and product marketing. He joined Lynx in 2019 after spending 15-plus years in product-related roles in technology companies ranging from startups to established corporations. During his tenure at Cisco, Pavan helped Cisco and its customers drive innovation by identifying promising marketing opportunities and incubating new business. He is a graduate of the Indian Institute of Technology, Bombay, and has earned an MS from Texas A&M and MBA from the Kellogg School of Management. Chip Downing, in his role at RTI, manages their global aerospace and defense business and helps drive the OMG data distribution service industry standard into the commercial and military aerospace market with the RTI Connect DDS platform. He serves as the VP ecosystem of the DDS Foundation, where his tasks are growing the sphere of influence for the OMG DDS standard with organizations that have companion specifications. In addition, he also serves as the chair of the FACE Consortium Business Working Group Outreach Subcommittee, promoting the FACE approach globally. Now, before we get started, I have some housekeeping items. This and Open Systems Media webcasts are copyrighted and may not be recorded or used in any way without the express written consent of Open Systems Media. The webcast will consume about 20 to 25 minutes today. I'm sorry, about 40 to 45 minutes today, leaving the remaining time for the question and answer session. Regarding your viewing console, which may be new to those of you who are familiar with the old Open Systems Media webcast, it has some important new features that I want to run through. The console consists of a set of windows that you can close, open, move, resize, and maximize to your personal preference. On entry, you'll see a picture of our presenter in the presenter window, their biography in the speaker bio window, and the presentation slides in the slides window, as well as a Q&A window that enables you to ask questions during the event. There are also seven icons across the bottom of your screen. Clicking the icon on the far left will reset your viewing area to the default configuration. The rest of the icons will open or close their corresponding window. You can hover your mouse over each window to show which window it controls. The handout icon third from the right opens the handout window, which has the presented slides in PDF format you can use to follow along with or download for future reference. The Q&A window enables you to participate in today's event. Simply type a question into the Ask a Question text box and then hit Submit. And if you have a question that's intended for a specific speaker, please note so at the beginning of your question. Otherwise, I'll hand out the questions equally to our speakers. If you have a question pertaining to the webcast operation itself, one of our technicians will get back to you during the webcast. We encourage you to ask questions throughout the event while the question is still fresh in your mind. We'll address as many as we can during the closing Q&A session. Please note that as much as we'd like to, we may not get to all of your questions today. In that case, someone may get back to you after the webcast with more information. The webcast will be archived online at the URL shown on your screen and be available within 24 to 48 hours. Once up, it'll be available for 1 year. So let's get started. I'm pleased to turn it over to Dr. Ben Bruskell. Take it away.
Thank you, John. The topic for today's webcast is reuse, and in my presentation, I'll be talking about a software reuse initiative underway within the Department of Defense, the Future Airborne Capability Environment, or FACE. But reuse only matters when the code is reliable, safe, and secure, so I'll be showing you how to get the reuse benefits of FACE while also meeting any assurance requirements that apply to your software. The presentation will be in three parts. First, I'll give a brief description of who AdaCore is, then a quick summary of the FACE approach and its software architecture. Chip Downing will have more to say about that later. Finally, an explanation of how programming language technology, in particular for Ada and its Spark subset, can help you meet both the FACE requirements for reuse and any relevant requirements for safety and security. So this is the Ada infomercial part. Who is AdaCore? We're a software tools company founded in 1994 and specializing in, but not limited to, the Ada programming language. We serve a customer base that needs to field critical systems, including hard, real-time, high-assurance embedded software. Our corporate headquarters are in New York and Paris, and we currently have more than 120 employees worldwide. We have four major products. Gnat Pro is a software development environment with program build tools, visual debugger, and so on, based on the GCC technology. Gnat Pro Ada implements all versions of the Ada language standard and has been our flagship product since the beginning. More recently, we've also introduced Gnat Pro for C and C++. CodePeer is a CWE-compatible advanced static analysis tool for Ada. It can find latent vulnerabilities and other coding errors and can workflow on a new or ongoing project or retrospectively to analyze an existing Ada code base. Spark Pro is a formal methods-based toolset for the Spark language, an analyzable subset of Ada. With Spark Pro, you can prove properties ranging from correct information flows to full functional correctness. QGen is a qualifiable and tunable code generator and model checker for a safe subset of Simulink and Stateflow models. It can generate code in either Spark Ada or MISRA-C. Our products are all open source and come with complete customer support. These products are targeted to a user base that needs to produce software that matters. A large percentage of our customers are from the mil-aero community. This includes military and commercial avionics, space satellites and launchers, air traffic management and control, defense systems, and so on. We also serve the transportation industry, rail and automotive, developers of high-security software, medical device providers, and other critical domains. The so-called software crisis has been around for more than 50 years, so chronic condition may be a better term. It's frustrating that despite, or perhaps in some cases because of, advances in both hardware and software technology, systems are still expensive to develop, maintain, and port from one platform to another. This seems to be especially true for defense systems, and around 10 years ago, a group was chartered to come up with an approach that would be acceptable to the government, to defense contractors, and to vendors who supply platform infrastructure such as real-time operating systems. Thus was born the Future Airborne Capability Environment and the FACE Consortium under the auspices of the Open Group. The idea was to leverage common standards such as POSIX, ARINC 653, and IDL in order to lower the cost of reusing airborne software components across multiple programs and platforms. It's important to realize what the FACE approach is not intended to do, namely to demonstrate that a component meets its functional requirements or that it complies with some safety or security standard. These are obviously critical, but are outside the scope of the FACE effort and will need to be demonstrated through other means. So what is FACE about? On the technical side, the FACE Consortium has produced a standard software reference architecture that captures a long-standing principle of software engineering. A component should be designed with a clear separation between its interface, which is stable, and its implementation, which may change. That makes it easier to port the component, along with any client code that uses services from that component, to a new platform. The implementation of the component might need to be adapted, but the interface and the client code can stay the same. The FACE software architecture is essentially an application of that principle to airborne systems. It comprises several layers or segments, which abstract a system's platform-independent interfaces from its platform-dependent behavior. As we'll see on the next slide, a critical part of the architecture is the operating system segment, or OSS, which supplies essential runtime services to other components through standard interfaces. Different parts of an airborne system may be written in different languages, and the FACE standard specifically calls out C, C++, Ada, both Ada 95 and Ada 2012, and Java. A component's data interface to other components is specified by its data architecture, and this is done in a programming language independent manner, for example, using IDL. The FACE standard includes bindings of IDL to C, C++, Ada, and Java. On the business side, the FACE Consortium has defined a mechanism for certifying and registering a component as conformant with the FACE requirements. These procedures are based on test cases to demonstrate that, first, the component provides the services that are required, and second, for accesses to services that may be platform-dependent, it uses only the interfaces that are allowed. The FACE Consortium also has an advocacy publicity role. For example, they organized a FACE pavilion at the Aerospace Tech Week conference that was supposed to have been held in mid-March in Toulouse, France. Unfortunately, the situation with COVID-19 forced the cancellation of that event, but it is being rescheduled for next year. Here we see the basics of the layered FACE software architecture. At the topmost layer is what FACE refers to as the portable components segment. An application that conforms to the FACE requirements for this segment can be reused in other platforms by recompiling the source code. Conforming to the FACE requirements means passing an official test suite to verify that the application only uses FACE-defined interfaces. So let's talk about these interfaces. If one FACE application needs to communicate with another, it has to use an API defined by the so-called transport services segment. This API is specified in IDL and contains a number of blocking and non-blocking functions. An application can use a variety of runtime services: memory management, concurrency control, exception handling, I/O, and so on. These have traditionally been a source of code non-portability, with calls on platform-dependent or RTOS vendor-specific APIs. The FACE technical standard addresses this issue in a couple of ways. First, FACE piggybacks on industry standard APIs for POSIX and ARINC 653 for runtime functionality. Now, these are very comprehensive APIs, and an application that has to meet safety or security requirements needs to restrict itself to a subset, or what FACE calls a profile, that provides the necessary determinism. We'll see this in more detail on the next slide. Second, FACE acknowledges that the runtime services are sometimes invoked not through explicit function calls on an API, but rather through programming language syntax. For example, in Ada, you would typically create threads and manage inter-thread communication using the language's tasking features, which are compiled into calls on runtime library functions provided by the compiler vendor. And so, analogous to the various profiles for the POSIX and ARINC 653 APIs, FACE defines so-called capability sets for C, C++, Ada, and Java. These specify the functionality that is allowed depending on the safety and or security context. The bottom half of the operating system segment block is implementation of the various services. These are not defined by the FACE standard and may in turn make use of low-level functions that are platform dependent. The POSIX and ARINC 653 APIs are rather extensive, but the full generality not only is unnecessary, but in fact is sometimes unacceptable, since it can make the code difficult or impossible to analyze with respect to safety or security properties. The FACE technical standard thus defines a set of API subsets or profiles. The most restrictive is the security profile. An OSS component implementing the API for this profile has to enforce time and space partitioning and real-time determinism predictability, and also satisfy any safety and security properties demanded by the context. Possible certification standards include the MIL Handbook 516C and MIL Standard 882E, or for commercial avionics, DIA 178C. The safety-based profile is a superset of the security profile. An OSS component implementing this profile has the same requirements for time and space partitioning and real-time determinism as for the security profile, and it must also comply with a relevant safety standard. The safety-extended profile is a superset of the safety base with additional functionality that is found in many RTOSes and that has the same requirements as safety base for partitioning, determinism, and assurance. The general purpose profile is a superset of the safety extended profile. An OSS component for this profile needs to supply space partitioning, but time partitioning and real-time determinism are not required. A FACE application can invoke runtime services indirectly through language syntax rather than through API calls. So corresponding to the various profiles are analogous language subsets known as capability sets. For example, in Ada, most concurrency features are allowed in the general purpose capability set, but only the so-called RavenSCAR subset, a deterministic subset of the Ada tasking facility, is permitted in the safety and security capability sets. The runtime services invoked through language syntax are implemented by runtime libraries supplied by the compiler vendor. These libraries are considered as OSS components and thus need to implement the functionality required for the relevant capability set while meeting the partitioning, determinism, and assurance requirements of the corresponding profile. So how does Ada Core fit into all of this? Remember that FACE conformance may be good evidence for portability, but that's only one part of code quality. How can we also show that an application meets its functional requirements and satisfies the necessary safety and security properties? A good place to start is by choosing a programming language that supports solid software engineering, and that's where Ada comes in. It enforces a wide range of checks, some at compile time and others at runtime, which can help you prevent vulnerabilities such as buffer overrun, integer overflow, and many others. A feature known as contract-based programming was introduced in Ada 2012 and is especially useful. You can annotate a procedure or a function with assertions that are checked on entry and return so that, in effect, you're embedding low-level requirements in the source code. This is helpful both to the human reader and to static analysis tools and can simplify certain kinds of safety certification efforts. A subset of Ada known as Spark supports static analysis through formal methods. So with Spark, you can verify a wide range of program properties with mathematics-based rigor, correct information flows, which can be useful for security certification, absence of runtime errors, and even full functional correctness. Thanks to advances in hardware and proof technology, formal methods are practical and are gaining traction in industry. We've seen Spark adopted for uses such as firmware verification at NVIDIA. An application can have some code in Spark with static enforcement of checks, and other code in Ada or other languages with runtime checking. This so-called hybrid verification lets you use the most powerful assurance technology on the code that is most critical, with traditional testing-based methods on the rest. So Ada and Spark can help fill the assurance gaps that phase conformance may leave. But languages need implementations, and that's where Ada Core comes in. First, the Ada compiler and the GnatCheck static analysis tool in GnatPro can verify that a face application only uses features that are permitted in the capability set and profile that the application is being certified against. This can save considerable effort during face conformance testing. Second, several Ada Core runtime libraries fully implement the OSS safety and security profile functionality and have a pedigree in high assurance avionics, since they've been used in projects certified at level A of DO-178B. The CERT library is suitable when ARINC 653 APEX is used rather than Ada tasking. It includes features such as a secondary stack for functions returning unconstrained arrays and a default last chance handler. Ada Core's RavenSCAR CERT library can be used in a POSIX environment. This is a superset of the CERT library that implements the so-called RavenSCAR tasking features, a simple, verifiable, and efficient subset of the Ada tasking model. The RavenSCAR CERT library supports preemptive fixed priority scheduling for a fixed number of tasks, which communicate via shared protected data. These libraries are available in GnatPro cross-compiler products targeted to several RTOSes, including Lynx Software Technologies Lynx OS 178 and Wind River's VxWorks 653. The general purpose profile and capability set may make sense for applications at low criticality, and the full Ada runtime implements these features. A sample phase project that used the RavenSCAR CERT library is Collins Aerospace Mission Flight Management Software, MFMS 1000. This is the core of an advanced flight management capability that users can customize and port across different aircraft platforms. MFMS 1000 is phase conformant with the safety base profile of the portable component segment and was developed with GnatPro for Lynx OS 178. So, summing up, the phase approach is about portability, and the technology choices that you make will affect how easy or difficult it is to meet other goals, in particular for reliability, safety, and security. The programming language plays an essential role here, since it's the source code that is developed, analyzed, and maintained. C and C++ have well-known traps and pitfalls, and although some of these can be mitigated through static analysis, Ada and Spark make it easier to catch errors early. Ada Core's GnatPro Ada has a long and successful track record for avionics software, and its tool set is especially helpful for phase conformance. You can use the compiler and the GnatCheck coding standard verifier to guarantee staying within the restrictions of the relevant capability set and profile, with Ada Core's certifiable runtime libraries providing the needed functionality. Phase is an evolving effort. On the technical side, the next edition of the technical standard will have a more comprehensive support for Ada 2012. For example, it will include Ada 2012 safety and security capability sets. On the business side, the FACE Consortium's promotional efforts are continuing, and we expect to see an increased emphasis on FACE conformance in upcoming DoD procurements. The next public FACE-related event is the Technical Interchange Meeting at Pax River, Maryland, hosted by NAVAIR. It's scheduled for September 22, 2020, with Ada Core as premier sponsor. Ada Core has been actively contributing to the FACE effort since 2012, and we are a principal member of the FACE Consortium. For more information about Ada Core or FACE, links to online resources are shown on the slide. But please note just one correction. For the FACE Consortium, a more helpful URL is www.opengroup.org/FACE. Thank you all for your attention. Now back to you, John.
Thanks, Ben. Good talk. And as I said at the beginning, please keep those questions coming in during the presentations, and when we're done, we'll get to them all. So our next speaker, Pavan, it's your turn.
Thank you, John, and this is a pleasure to be here. I really liked what Ben shared with us today, and what I'll do is my goal is that I want to kind of talk a little bit about Lynx and kind of introduce who we are, and a lot of you would have heard about it, heard of us, and there's a lot of innovations we're driving. We'll talk about that, but our topic today is really about hardware and software reuse. So I want to spend a few minutes on two topics that are close, that's near dear to my heart. One is modularity, other is how do you enable modularity and leverage it using isolation. And then I'll touch a bit on certification. I want to also leverage all the description of FACE that Ben just shared and use that. One of the key things we just announced, compliance with the FACE 3.0 APIs, I think about a month and a half ago. So with that, who is Lynx? So as Lynx, we've been around for about 30 years. And all of that time has been focused, we are a software technology company. We focus on what we call mission critical, real-time platforms. And we are at present, and we've been deployed in kind of a lot of the aerospace and defense applications and with a number of other verticals, including medical, industrial, robotics, lots of other things. But I want to be clear that a lot of the innovation in this space is being driven by the aerospace and defense players, including a lot of you on the call. And the idea is that the certification was really important in this space, and now we're starting to see traction or need for certification and a focus on it in other sectors. But our goal has been, as a company, as we have gone through our various technology evolutions, to always think about how can we accelerate the pace at which innovation happens. And as you think about that, as a company, where we started as our RTOS company, we have now almost evolved to an RTOS plus separation kernel, and together that comes together as a framework that essentially takes a leaf from the modular open source open systems architecture, MOSA, that I know Chip will talk about. We've taken that and said, okay, how can we offer a framework, a set of libraries that can really help developers bring the different pieces together? And because the number one thing is that right now we're seeing the system complexity and the certification requirements increasing, and when that happens, the cost to develop, the cost to certify, and then deploy, they all go up. And I'm proud to say that there are a lot of innovations, and a lot of them are in the space of interoperability and modularity that the FACE consortium is driving, that are helping really kind of control those costs, but also at the same time also allow developers like yourself incorporate different features, whether especially from strength points, whether it's from the RTOS, from a real-time determinism certification perspective, or from Linux, from support for network protocols, or any of the open source frameworks perspective. So that's who we are. We are at the forefront of this. And so the topic of today's conversation is about reuse, but what makes it particularly interesting really is that there's a number of external factors that are affecting what innovations do we have available for us to include in our systems, but then how can we really, what are the limitations that happen? So, and a lot of these platforms have to be viable for 30 years or even longer. But then how do you now keep up with the change of greater rate of pace of change in the electronics industry if you have kept track of the various hardware architectures coming out? We see the number of cores, we see the focus on data paths, we see the focus on security, trusted environment, execution environment, And all of that is coming into one platform. But how do you now leverage all that hardware capability in a way that your system can meet the requirements and still be certified in a formal way? So the top three external factors that I think about is, number one is that meeting the certification mandate while we're dealing with some of the changing environments. So that means the certification cost is likely to go up as we move to more complex multi-core systems. The cost go up, so we have to rethink how we approach certifications and how can we map the system requirements back to the implementation. There's a bunch of M&A activity happening as well, and that's where a lot of the geopolitical factors coming in the play. I have an example here where Infineon recently agreed that they will agree to U.S. concessions for their acquisition of Cypress. There was a recent deal where Broadcom wanted to acquire Qualcomm, but that wouldn't go through. So at the same time, we have technologies coming together, new innovations, but then you have to be aware of what the geopolitical factors are. And then from a pure open source innovation perspective, there is, from the hardware side, there is a RISC-V architecture that now is evolving rapidly and getting a lot of support. At the same time, there is a lot more AI frameworks like TensorFlow, Torch, Caffe, Theano, and all of them, we have the frameworks today that we have, but as we move forward and a lot of the systems include, want to access sensor fusion platforms that can now digest the data using AI, that's when we're talking about systems moving from what used to be single function, easy certifiable systems to multi-modal, multi-OS, multi-functional systems that have certification requirements for a portion of them, but at the same time also need to be evolved. And this is where the idea of platform systems, independent system interfaces led by the FACE Consortium really come into play and help all of us think of developing a lot of these modules separately, but then being able to take them from as our system evolves. And I'll talk a bit about how we have helped some of the folks do it. But before we go there, let's talk a bit how do we think about compartmentalizing hardware and software. So if you think about the hardware part, in hardware, the isolation is really clear. But when it comes to software, it becomes really interesting, and so the value of reuse is very clear. It's about reducing engineering labor, reducing program risk, reducing cost. But then I want to talk to, in addition to FACE, I want to talk about a few other concepts that the Lynx has worked on and championed and being able to benefit from. One of them is reusable software components. When it comes to reuse, it requires a lot of standardization on interfaces, but it becomes really difficult when certification gets involved. And this is when the reusable software components become really useful and important. I like the idea because it addresses the most difficult and critical areas of certification, which is how do you integrate with multiple applications at the various levels of the DO-178 criticality? Now, what RSC or reusable software component is really a software collection that meets a requirement, certification requirement, but can be used on more than one project without having to generate certification artifacts. And the nice part is that this documentation set includes the detailed partition certification analysis that focuses on time and space partitioning so that when it's used in a different project, developers can allocate budgets to use of the to the use of the operating system services. So this documentation includes requirements, design data, test, switch coverage analysis. So what we've seen is that the idea similar to the reusable software components really can provide integrators saving 6 to 9 months. But I also want to kind of put in a word of caution, because if the reuse is very useful and very helpful, but if not done correctly, that does not help. So it's always about when with reuse can we achieve the level of risk that we are comfortable with and the certification requirements that we are okay with. So with that, and you say, how does it map back to Lynx? So Lynx 170 RTOS is a space, time-space partitioned, FAA-accepted reusable software component. It offers the interoperability benefits of POSIX along with the support for the Airlink 650 APEX APIs, as well as now the Phase 3.0 is conformant with Phase 3.0 with compliance with conformance coming soon. So that's one part that is about really interoperability and modularity. But the next part I want to talk about is how do you think about the isolation or the separation kernel philosophy, as we call it. So the separation kernel philosophy, as we call it, it's really about going back to the point about hardware. Modularity in hardware is really precise, but in software there's an incredible amount of dependencies that are really very difficult to track and certify. Now, from a Lynx perspective, we have made investments in the separation kernel philosophy, where the goal is that rather than attempting to shape the system behavior indirectly by issuing a command to a platform API that might be behind a black box, with the separation kernel, the developers can now directly control system behavior through a unique kind of system architecture specification that's written really by the developer and enforced by the processor. So it means that now we are putting as little software between each operating system and the hardware and as possible. Now, in contrast to traditional kind of RTOS-type platforms where really the hardware control, real-time scheduling, security, they're all integrated into a common stack. What the world needs is really a framework that allows system architects to subdivide the system, the hardware system, into smaller independent stacks, now which then include only dependencies required. So that helps because now if you look at a traditional approach, especially for systems that need to be robust and secure, now that there the much of the burden is placed on the hypervisor or the OS. Now that the challenge of that is, It creates platform dependencies which impact performance directly, and they cause a number of architectural challenges that we have come across. That includes shared address space, shared CPU privilege, common arbitration points, global resource pools. So our philosophy has been to build an architecture that just allows a lot of transparency and reduces the dependencies, and enables the developer to verify the system against its requirements directly. It also means that once the system is configured, the goal is to load the operating system in each of the subjects and then get out of the way. And when it comes to managing a system like this, instead of dealing with a central administrator or a helper OS, it's really up to the system designer and the developer to assign the various administrative functions to the different subjects within that system. It boils down to simplicity and transparency. Now, an example where we have seen the use of this kind of system is really where, really think of that as a data guard, where a little encryption subject is encrypting data as it comes in and decrypting data as it comes in and encrypting data as it goes out. Now, the problem is that the guard, you want to make sure that it meets all the security requirements which get it certified. But if the data guard that is responsible for encrypting and decrypting the data was dependent on a black box operating system and the APIs therein, now, yes, first of all, certifying an operating system and APIs would be very difficult. Second, if anything changes in the operating system, that means a whole new certification cycle. So the idea is that by separating the functions, the data guard from the operating system itself, now the certification effort becomes a lot easier. The transparency certainly increases, and the level of risk really kind of goes down. Now, where have we seen customers kind of our customers use, a lot of you folks use this kind of architecture? Is there two big categories? Number one, where there are capabilities that are more suitable for RTOS, and the capabilities that are most suitable for Linux can come together. That usually means a real-time for control certification, or even what we call legacy code that needs to be brought forward. And then a lot of the Linux capabilities for things like communication stack supporting networking protocols, as well as supporting some of the open source AI or other frameworks if possible. We've also seen this kind of modular architecture being used in architectures where number of microcontrollers need to be consolidated. So there is existing microcontroller code, and the software from those microcontrollers needs to be reused on a new hardware system, and that really allows a lot of folks to preserve capital investments that have gone in building that code, but then now being able to add new capabilities to the system. So hopefully a lot of this is not new, and you've heard about it. Where I really wanted to kind of bring it to get back to this topic is that when it comes to reuse, a lot of it goes back to interoperability, as well as isolation between different components, so they can be brought forward. So my last topic is certification. Well, the challenges facing us in certification multi-core, and where we are focused now is we are really focused on. If you look at the current certification approaches, they don't really scale as we move forward with multi-core. So where we are focused now is providing as much transparency as possible, providing as much as performance understanding as possible, and really looking at the top-down safety methodology as our primary approach to safety conditions. But then, in the end, it comes down to simplification, and our goal is simplify, and so that we can manage the certification path as well as the non-certification components well on their own, but then bring them together and then be able to use these components in the future. Now, I would summarize saying that there's a lot of innovations happening in this space. You're welcome to go to our website, www.links.com, to look at some of these ideas I talked about. With that, let me hand it back to John. John, back to you.
Thanks, Pavan. And I'll turn the mic over to Chip. And after Chip's done, we will start our Q&A. Thank you.
Thanks, John. Thanks, everybody, for joining today. We're going to talk just briefly about MOSA up front and then talk about FACE and DDS in the next 10 to 15 minutes. So Real-Time Innovations is the company has been around for about 20 years. We have over 1,500 commercial design wins. We have offices based in both Sunnyvale and Spain. And we have a very good leadership in connectivity standards. That's really where our space is in different types of industries. So it's not just aerospace and defense. DDS is an open standard. It's cross-industry. There's two parts to DDS. There's the application side. This is the API that software developers code to. And then there's the wire protocol side, using the RTPS protocol. This is how you get interoperability between different types of systems. It's an open standard managed by the object management group. There's over 12 different implementations and suppliers for this product, so it's very clearly an open standard used globally. So DDS, as I mentioned before, it's an open standard. It's peer-to-peer, so there's no brokers, there's no servers involved. It's really for design for machine-to-machine type of operations. It's a data-centric, it uses, surrounds data models and has a publish-subscribe technology where there's publishers that take data, publish it out their capabilities onto the network, and then subscribers that subscribe to specific data topics in that data. Yeah. It's loosely coupled. This is really important. Pavan just talked about how do you add new capabilities, how do you update capabilities. Being loosely coupled is ideal for doing this, where you can actually pull out a component. You can have late joiners. You can have interesting configuration with many amenities if you have to. That runs over top of any type of protocol, TCP, UDP, serial fiber, shared memory. There's no limitations there. It has a real-time quality of service that's very powerful, so you can actually set deadlines and latency and budgets and lifespan of licenses. You can actually manage how the system behaves and how it should possibly restart or actually go off and try to find another publisher for data that's required. By design, because it is peer-to-peer, it's inherently parallel. So if you need to collide the system, DBS is a great way to go off and do that. And it, because it's, there's no broker involved, no servers involved, it's massively scalable. So you can actually take systems and scale them up to millions of entities and have them still work reliably. And of course, we have standards-based security. So the security standard that goes with DDS is an open standard that is now implemented by multiple vendors. So RTI, as I mentioned before, is committed to global standards across different industries, whether it's AutoSAR, we have FACE, we've got CISO, we have SOSA, we have GVA and NGVA and UCS and others. So we're highly committed to making sure that systems are open and ready to be updated easily. Now, getting to DoD system architectures, there's really four different main components of system architecture in the defense industry. There's software, there's hardware, there's network, and RF and signal processing. And these tend to be well-known, and there's now standards surrounding these. Now, when you talk about MOSA, just so everybody understands what that is, that's a modular open systems approach, also known as an open system architecture. That's both a technical and a business strategy for designing affordable and adaptable systems. There's five key principles of MOSA. It's an enabling environment, employ a modular design, designate key interfaces, open standards, and also certify components. So, John, can you hear me okay now?
Yeah, Chip, you're sounding better now. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Okay. So, as examples of MOSA implementations, there's FACE, Future Airborne Capability Environment. There's VICTI. There's HOST for hardware, and also MORA for RF and signal processing. And there's many, many more. There could be CMOS and others. So in DoD, it's now a law to try to use MOSA on these next generation systems, and there's requirements for going off and doing that. That essentially says it employs a modular design, it's subject to verification to the system's interfaces, and also allows for major system upgrades of components from people outside your supply chain. So there's standards, as I mentioned, like FACE. They do all of these capabilities built into the MOSA standard and MOSA requirements. In addition, the DoD expects to get benefits out of using MOSA, or else what's the problem, or what's the use? So they expect significant cost savings. They're looking for schedule reduction and rapid deployment of new technology. They're looking for opportunities for technical upgrades and refresh without redesigning and reconfiguring and retesting the entire system. And then, obviously, interoperability. They want to make sure they have a systems interoperability with mission, different types of missions integrations going along with that. And, of course, FACE lives up to all those requirements also. So, quick FACE introduction. Ben did a stack. There's another way to take a look at that stack. There's five components. The topmost is the portable component segment. the goal of FACE is really to enable different portable components to be rapidly integrated onto different platforms. So it's really about moving these applications from system to system, platform to platform. There's then the transport services segment. This is what the application programs talk to move data throughout the system. There's the platform services, specific services segment. This is the capabilities that are built into a military platform, an aircraft or a tank or something of that nature. There's also the IO services segment and then the operating system that Ben talked about quite well. Here's another way to take a look at these segments. This is right out of the FACE technical standard. You can see the different operating system profiles that are there, the security, safety base, safety extended, general purpose, and you can see where things like graphics drop into the platform-specific services segment. So as I mentioned before, RTI has supported standards for two decades. We were the first commercial off-the-shelf certified conformant FACE transport services segment implementation. This happened back in 2018. It supports both our full-blown product called DDS Professional and also our subset of that designed for really embedded systems and memory-constrained systems called DDS Micro. And we supported the FACE technical space standard 2.1.1. and with DDS Micro for that certification. Now, there's the benefits of using DDS, the FACE TSS. It has very flexible communication. It's not restricted to, say, one-to-one type of configurations. You can do one-to-one, but you also do one-to-many, many-to-one, and also many-to-many. So you can have a lot of different communication strategies to connect up different systems. It allows for routing and federation of different systems. It very importantly, it has interoperability with non-FACE applications, because right now FACE is really just getting its legs. There's still a lot of applications that do not have FACE conformance, nor will the investment to make those applications FACE conformant be reasonable. So it's very good for tying together legacy and new technologies. Mentioned before, we have a rich quality of service. We also have a very expeditious path to DL170C DAL-A certification and tooling, so you can actually tell what's going on with your network. We're finding a lot of folks, because they have to integrate both legacy and new software, they're using a FACE TSS for systems that have a FACE requirement, but also bring in DDS to actually interface with those other legacy applications. So that's a really interesting use case that we're seeing across the board here. So when you do this, you can actually bridge different types of FACE environments, whether it's on the FACE technical standard 1.0, 2.0, 2.1, and beyond. You can now bring in these different systems using DDS, mentioned before, connecting FACE and non-FACE systems. Also, upgrading both certified and uncertified system, its loose coupling allows this to happen, and that's a really key technology as we move forward into diverse heterogeneous multi-core processors. It's going to be very hard to use traditional technologies to prove robust partitioning. We can now do this with DDS. And it allows us tech insertion into certified systems on multi-core platforms. That's going to be one of the biggest challenges in the industry. DDS helps enable this. So just to summarize, we're a leader in the global cross-industry standards. RTI supports the creation and most of the standards globally. We certainly are a leader in commercial DDS data distribution service. As I mentioned, we're the leader in FACE TSS conformance certification, and we support over 70 hardware and operating system platforms, including LinksOS. And if you like, you can actually download Connects DDS for 30 days for free. You can also, as you move forward with the program, you'll appreciate the fact that it is royalty free. And with that, John, over to you.
Thank you, Chip. Thank you, all three of you. Excellent presentations. Now let's get right to our Q&A. We got some questions from the audience here. First question I have is for Ben. Just curious, you mentioned that 8 of 95 and 8 of 12 are supported, but what versions of C and C++ and Java are we talking about? And finally, what about ADA 2020?
Okay, yeah, good question. So for C, it's the C99 version of the standard that's called out. For C++, it's C++ 2003. For Java, it's the Java Enterprise Edition 7 and 8. With respect to future versions of ADA, as well as actually for other languages, it really depends on when the FACE developers are requesting features from those languages. So, for example, for ADA 2020, you know, we expect to see implementations of ADA or ADA 2X in the upcoming future. But until that shows up in the coding standards for the FACE developers, it probably would not be making it into the standard. In fact, that was kind of the story with ADA 2012. It really was the impetus from the developers of FACE applications that requested features like the contract-based programming that was the impetus for adding that functionality to the FACE capability sets.
Thanks, Ben. Next question for Pavan. About how do you use the same artifacts for various projects with regards to RSCs without any change?
Yeah, so RSC, it's sort of a collection that is kind of intended to be used in multiple projects. It comes with a set of documentation, and the documentation includes detailed partition interface analysis. It also includes the guidance documentations include requirements, design data, test suite coverage analysis. So that all of that really helps. All that really helps in the reuse of the same components again in a different project.
Okay. I have a question here from the audience. This one is for Chip. When will RTI support and have certified FACE conformance for the FACE 3.0 transport services segment?
That's a good question. We're working on that right now. We'll do a pre-release in the late Q3 of this year and have a full release of the product as a certified product in Q4. In addition, we'll actually have DL-170C DALA certification evidence available in Q3 of next year, not only for Connect's DDS cert, but also the Connect's DSS transport services segment. So you actually have both of those into a flight critical system at DALA.
Okay. Thanks, Chip. And you were breaking up a little bit there. Next question I have is for Ben, and I think it ties into when you mentioned how the Aerospace Tech Week was going to have some FACE stuff going on. Do you see in the near future that FACE would be mandated by civil platform operators? What are the possibilities there?
Well, it's an interesting question. I haven't seen it, but I'm not sure that I am the best person to answer that. I don't know if Chip or Pavan have any comments on that. I don't know if there's been participation in FACE from the civil community. I don't know. Pavan or Chip, have you seen any interest there?
Chip, you put that platform program together for Aerospace Tech Week. What's the response?
Well, certainly, commercial aerospace could use FACE if they chose to do so. The key here is the business side of FACE using open standards that already exist, like Airbus 653. So it's a very short step for a commercial supplier to then, if they want to build a military aircraft, to add a TSS on top of Airbus 653 and DDS, and be conformant in that space. We're also seeing industries like oil and gas creating their own consortium to create a FACE-like architecture and business approach. And this is really due to wanting to get the data out of their system. You're going to have modularity of different components in that system to actually extract that data and move it off to the right parties. So we're seeing the FACE approach, whether it's called FACE or some other type of standard, being used in these other industries. And it's really about breaking apart a system, making it multi-supplier, and be able to swap out new components very quickly in a very competitive.
Okay. Next question. This one's for looks like it's Pavan. Does Link Secure act as a lightweight hypervisor?
Thank you. That's a really good question because I get the question a lot. Yes. So the easy answer is yes, but it's not just a lightweight hypervisor. The goal is that that we can. It comes down for our objective to keep our architecture elegant when it comes to assurance, so that your specific the design requirements can be mapped to design. Think of Link Secure as really a way to create a kind of separate stacks of the hardware resources for each of the subjects. So that once the system boots up, that the OS starts, and then there is the kind of the hypervisor gets out of the way. That's how I think about it, because just to qualify that word, lightweight, I would say it's more about focusing on the security and safety of the system and what is the function of a hypervisor in that with that set of requirements.
Thank you. Next question. Do modular approaches, Pavan, only to specific applications inside avionics, or is it simply everywhere? And do you see differences by geography?
It's the modular approach. I think both from what we do it from a separation of corner perspective, as well as from an interoperability perspective, a space consortium for US and others. We see that modular approach is growing everywhere. And a lot of that is driven by, we used to see RFPs that are very much kind of start with thinking of a single OS, but then now we have given guidance is really use the best operating system, best data distribution strategy with RTI, based on what the strengths of each one are. So if it's real time, you've got to port the legacy code. If it's control, it's certification, then yes, the real-time OS is absolutely the right platform. But then if you've got to use network protocols that were kind of almost supported by almost the IT side standards, then you got to be able to use leverage Linux. So we're seeing a lot of the modularity in terms of leveraging technologies and IP from different spaces that are coming together. So it's all across the geography. It's almost independent, though the difference is the regulation and the requirements that need to be met by geography.
Thanks, Pavan. I've got a question here for Ben. FACE seems concerned with reuse at the source code level. Model-based development can achieve reuse at a higher level. Is this addressed in FACE?
Okay, another good question. Actually, it's not addressed at present. It's a good possibility that it will be in the future. On the other hand, it's certainly possible to use model-based tools with FACE. So an example would be, as I briefly mentioned, AdaCore's QGen model checker and code generator for Simulink and Stateflow models. That can generate either Spark Ada or Mizra C, and the generated code doesn't make use of runtime functionality. So, therefore, it would end up satisfying the constraints of the various safety and security capability sets. And actually, QGen is on track to have a qualification at the development tool or TQL1 level under DIA 178C by the end of 2020, and that will be useful. Basically, it means that the generated code will be as trustworthy as the model. So in short, although the FACE standard doesn't currently address model-based design, it's certainly possible to use model-based tools for a FACE-conformant application.
Okay, I think I got time for maybe one or two more questions here. First of the next two questions. Any limits to hardware bare metal cores? This is not addressed, so anybody want to grab that?
So thank you for that. And it might be to me, John. So I did mention for a brief bit, and one of the goals that we wanted to address with kind of thinking with the separation of kernel philosophy is that we got to be able to run bare metal right next to a real-time OS workload or a Linux workload. So I think it's So I think it's designed to support bare metal code, and there are lots of different configurations, and a lot of that depends. I was referring to a lot of the newer hardware architectures have lots of cores, and they're used in all different ways. But we can, I'm happy to answer questions offline about that.
And I think from an RTI perspective, we do have a DDS micro that's designed for microcontrollers and low resource environments. So you actually run this on top of a bare metal core if you wanted to, just with some simple software on top of that.
Okay, we're up to our time limit. Chip or anyone, I know Chip as a face outreach person, can you talk a little bit about, I think there's a face SOSA TIMEX technical interchange meeting coming up in September. Is that correct? Where people can even be in person? Hopefully they can be in person by then to participate.
Yes, let's all hope we can all get together on September 22nd in Pax River, essentially Solomons, Maryland, where we'll have an entire day of both face and SOSA suppliers demonstrating their face-conformant hardware software. It'll be at the Holiday Inn in the Solomons on the 22nd. And so I'm looking forward to that. We should probably have at least 50 suppliers at that event, similar to last year's event at the Air Force in Dayton, Ohio.
And that was a very good event, which I attended. So I'm sure it'll be the same this year. Hopefully we can all go. So that brings us right up to our time limit today. Sorry we cannot get to all of your questions. Someone may get back to you after the webcast with more information. I want to thank Ben, Pavan, and Chip for speaking today, and AdaCore, Link Software, and RTI for sponsoring the event. This and all Open Systems Media webcasts are copyrighted and may not be recorded or used in any way without the express written consent of Open Systems Media. This webcast will be archived online today and be available for 1 year. There will also be an MP3 version of the event available. Thank you all for attending, and I look forward to seeing you on future Open Systems Media webcasts. Goodbye.